And they get to the top of the stairs and turn around. And at that point, Drew's caught up to them. And it's Coach Saban.
Wow.
Drew's mouth drops.
Of course.
And Coach Saban turned around, looked at him, stuck out his hand and said, "Hi, how you doing? I'm Coach Nick Saban." And Drew just, he just reached out, you know, one of those shaking his hand, like,
yes, you are. Yes, you are.
It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast.
Welcome back, sports fans from snowy Northwest Louisiana. This doesn't happen very often where we live, but
exactly.
It did this year.
That's right.
And Darren, we never get a white Christmas here in the Bossier, Shreveport area, the part of Northwest Louisiana where we live. But usually January or February, we get at least a light dusting, and that's pretty much what we got. Not as much snow as I think we have ice out there.
Yeah, I think we got a lot of sleet this time is more. But I tell you, and it was one of those really weird, what we end up getting like a couple of inches basically of sleet. And when you go and you look outside, it's not as much on the grass as it is on the concrete and the pavement, which is really odd. I honestly don't know that I've ever seen that before. But I mean, whatever. It was very pretty still, you know, it created this solid white and thankfully didn't really have to get out in it. I hate it for those that did, and, you know, hope and pray for safety for all that do have to get out in it. And I know the further east you got, the bigger the snow got. JT Jazzy's Chef sent me a picture earlier today of their final when it quit snowing. They were just under 8 inches where he is in Tennessee of snow. He said they were probably going to be shut down for a while. And I said, well, down here in Northwest Louisiana, we got 2 inches of sleet. And yeah, we're going to be shut down for a while too. We don't have the equipment and stuff to deal with it. So we're going to be down for a while too. Nobody's going anywhere.
that's really what it comes down to. We just don't have the equipment.
Yep.
But days like this, we've had today and tomorrow, I don't think it's going to get above freezing either. It reminded me, where I went to high school, we had cold winters. Mm-hmm. So it reminded me of why I quit playing football and just started playing basketball. And a big part of that was basketball was indoors.
Yeah.
It's brutal getting hit in if it's freezing outside. It's brutal. So now maybe if I'd grown up in a warmer climate, I would have stuck with it, but who knows?
Well, you know, I remember being in high school and I think about it now and it makes my bones hurt, but you know, in Tennessee, we still got cold, but nothing like what you're talking about and where you were. We didn't get that kind of cold, but we still in November would have some pretty cold games. You know, being an offensive lineman, you know, I thought I had to show how tough I was and not wear sleeves and all that kind of, that makes my bones hurt even thinking about not doing that now. I don't know how I pulled that off, but we did have some cold games and man, it did hurt. The worst thing in the world is if you don't wear gloves and you don't have on sleeves and you make incidental contact with a helmet. And, you know, it like catches the top of your hand or right on your wrist or something. I mean, you like feel that in your toes. That's such a painful when it's cold. That hurts so bad.
That sounds brutal. I used to get traumatized just walking from the parking lot to the gym.
Now that's real cold.
Speaking of basketball, let's go ahead and do an update on where the SEC teams, men's and women's, are in the current top 25 poll. On the men's side, Tennessee at number 6, cruising right along, seems to be finding their groove. Kentucky, after a loss to A&M, in which A&M was just absolutely on fire, is holding at number 8. Auburn, always a factor in the polls, and they will be in SEC play at 13. Yep. And we're including Oklahoma at 15. And then Ole Miss at 22. We're not used to seeing Ole Miss basketball in the men's top 25. So how about that?
Yeah, I tell you, it's really been incredible. What, of course, they had an amazing non-conference schedule. Of course, we didn't talk a whole lot about it because it's still right in the middle of when everything's really rolling with football. But they had a really amazing non-conference schedule, just stacked win on top of win on top of win on top of win. And a lot of the conversation, maybe that's a better way to say it, a lot of the conversation was, okay, that's pretty, but what's it going to look like when you get into conference play? When you start to face that schedule, what's it going to look like? And so far, even though they've had some hiccups, even though there's been some losses, so far they are maintaining that high level better than I think anybody outside of their locker room in their building thought they would, truthfully. And so they've climbed, and notably, last week when we did our AP Top 25 update, Texas was in that top 25, hanging on right at 25, and has started to slide a bit, little bit. They still would basically be kind of top 30, but still they've fallen out of the top 25 throughout the process of the last week. So Ole Miss is heading in one direction, at least for right now. Texas is heading in the other, even though they still have a very talented team, and wouldn't surprise me if they end up over the next couple of weeks back in the top 25. But Ole Miss being there and taking that slot is pretty surprising, and happy to see it, because like you said, it's just not something we're accustomed to.
Rick Barnes at Tennessee continues to do a great job.
Absolutely.
Very underrated coach. I don't think he gets his due. And I tell you, Darren, I felt old watching the Kentucky play the other day. I was watching Reed Shepherd play for the Wildcats. And if you remember, Reed's daddy, Jeff Shepherd, was on that 1998 national championship team. I think he was the MVP of the Final Four and championship game. I can't remember which it was. But his son, Reed, of course, wears his number 15, a Kentucky kid from London, North Laurel High School. I think he was Mr. Basketball. And, you know, we talked about this before on some episodes in the past, Darren, that, you know, you start realizing how fast time's going when you're watching children of players that you remember when their dads played.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it really is incredible. And what an awesome thing to see him be able to play in Kentucky. That's really, really cool. It's with the career that his dad had at Kentucky, to be able to see him be able to follow in that footsteps and hopefully do the same thing, have the same level of career. That makes you feel old, but pretty fun too. That's an exciting thing to be able to watch.
It's one of the things that I like as a fan is I like to see homegrown kids, so to speak. And that's absolutely one of the things that I love about LSU football, when we have so many players in state, and when we can close the borders and get those players to stay in state, I think that adds a level. And so when I was watching Kentucky, I'm like, well, here's a kid just down the road from Lexington, about 88 miles or so, or less than that, even, I don't know, but playing. So it brought back a lot of memories of that 1998 championship team.
That was an incredible team. They were fun to watch from beginning to end, all the way through the championship.
Let's go over to the women's side of the top 25. And we have three teams from representing the SEC. South Carolina, again, boy, they're going to be a tough out for anybody. I know they got later this month, I think they're coming to Baton Rouge to play LSU.
That's right.
Which will be I imagine that will get a lot of ratings, people watching that game. Of course, last year when LSU went to Columbia, South Carolina pretty much, I think, beat them by 20-plus points. So it'll be interesting. Go ahead.
And wasn't that like the highest or most watched women's basketball game, like highest viewership or something? I'm almost positive it was the LSU-South Carolina game. I know that a couple of the games toward the end of the LSU run kind of crept into that same, but I'm pretty sure it was either that, I think it was that game, but anyway, still, it's bringing a lot of attention to the women's basketball.
That wasn't a primetime game. That was an early Sunday game. So I don't know what the ratings were. And you also have to remember with the popularity of Caitlin Clark at Iowa.
That's true.
That's there's a lot of interest, people watching those games as well. So, but definitely this is a great time for women's basketball. I think it's, as you just mentioned, growing in popularity. So South Carolina at number one, LSU after a loss at Auburn, fell from 7 to 10, and Texas at number 11. So that's on the women's side of the AP top 25.
And correct me if I'm wrong, these have been the three basically since we've started covering the, going through these, that's, it's been these three and absolutely nobody else in the top 25 week in and week out.
Correct.
Thought that was the case.
Well, going on in addition to basketball right now, the NFL playoffs. And we don't talk about professional sports a lot on this show, but these pretty significant storylines that we want to briefly discuss today. And as we look at this first round, Green Bay with a shocking win over Dallas, 48-32. The Cowboys once again don't show up for the playoffs, Darren.
Wow. That is just, I mean, I don't think the Cowboys stink worse at playoff football than Vanderbilt does at regular season football. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. It's just unreal. Jerry Jones said, it is beyond my comprehension how we lost this game. I mean, I get it. Yeah, I can see where you would have that immediate reaction, but at some point, I guess the whole thing is a little beyond your comprehension, because, I mean, how many years are we into this where, I mean, just playoff football is just not what Dallas does. I mean, well, they do it, but they go out quick. You know, it doesn't go well. No matter what they're seeded, no matter how their season is gone, it just doesn't seem to go well. And shout out just real quick to JT Jazzy Chef, being a big Packers fan. Go Pack, go. He was extremely excited yesterday. So no offense to Cowboy fans, but he was very excited yesterday.
with good reason. The Cowboys are a good team, and they've been a good team for the last 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. They haven't made it to the level of being a great team. And that shows up in these playoff games. Were they outcoached? Did they not execute? You could argue all of those things. Yeah. At the end of the day, Green Bay played better, and that happens when we play these games. And so Green Bay is moving on, where they will have a date with the San Francisco 49ers.
49ers.
Wow. That's this coming Saturday in the divisional round, January 20th at 7:15. So it's a primetime game, 7:15 Central Time. And that's going to be a monumental challenge for Green Bay. San Francisco has been a pretty solid team all year.
Yep. It's tough to gauge from a Green Bay perspective exactly what this will look like, because so often you have that the game you're not favored in during wild card week, and you win that game and you come off of that high. And it's there seems to be no in the middle. It's either one extreme or the other. You either continue this climb that it seems like just everything is now clicking and it's your run to make, or you hit and it's like, man, we won that game, and then you lose the next game by three scores. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of in the middle. It's either one of those two extremes. And I think it's pretty hard to gauge. Kind of feels like the Packers have things clicking. Some things really looked good yesterday. But like you said, that Niners team, they've had a good year. They've looked good. So should be, hopefully, it's a fun game to watch.
Staying in the state of Texas, the Houston Texans throttled the Cleveland Browns 45-14. And talk about pouring salt on an open wound, Darren. The players that put this beat down on Cleveland, there were significant players from picks in the Deshaun Watson trade that sent Watson to Cleveland. Of course, Watson's injured, did not even play in this game.
Right.
Meanwhile, CJ Stroud, Nico Collins, defense, D'Amico Ryan's
has just
done a fabulous job coaching. Yep. And what a statement. I know Joe Flacco was filling in and he played pretty well.
Yeah.
But 45-13 is what we call in the old days just a beatdown.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know what? Props to Joe Flacco. He played well. But it just wasn't going to happen. It, you know, I'm a D'Amico Ryan fan. Loved to see him win. But there was a part of me that, you know, for all the jokes and everything about the old guy coming in and, you know, hopefully Joe Flacco can stay off his walker long enough to run the offense. It wouldn't have hurt my feelings to see the old guy pull it off. Knew it wasn't going to happen, but it wouldn't have hurt my feelings. But man, you know, the Texans just left no doubt. They look solid. You're talking about a turnaround and getting things in the right, on the right track. That sure seems to be what they've done this year and so far in the playoffs.
Definitely a hot team. And for their victory, yep, Houston will travel to the number one seed in the AFC, the Baltimore Ravens, for a Saturday afternoon game. I believe that's Saturday afternoon.
Yep. I think that's
so
right.
So a big test for the Texans. Definitely. As they travel to Baltimore. In yep. other games, the Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Miami Dolphins in extremely yeah. cold weather conditions, 26-7, over the controversial Peacock game, where you had to sign yeah. up for the streaming service Peacock in order to watch the game. I don't know if anyone's going to release these statistics, Darren, but I'd like to know how many people canceled their subscription the next day.
Well, you can pretty much guarantee that that'll never be released, but they will definitely tout how many people signed up the day before to get the game. Those numbers are probably already out and we just haven't seen them. But how many people canceled? Those numbers won't be out. And I don't know about you, but we already have Peacock because that's where you get The Office. So, I mean, it's the only, I mean, well, duh, you're going to have Peacock. So, I mean, it was already there. We're not going to not have The Office after they took it off Netflix. I mean, come on.
Of course. 23 million viewers streamed the game. So it set a record, I think, for most watched streamed. Game ever. And of course the NFL is going to tout that statistic. I didn't quite understand all the outrage behind it because this is pretty much the day and age that we're living in. How long have we yeah. had the NFL Sunday Ticket? And
right.
And everything, you know, how many streaming how many people don't use some sort of streaming service? I don't know. Maybe exactly. they're, but the fact that, you know, such an outcry over change and people being outraged over it, I thought that was a little bit over the top because
agree.
You could sign up, watch the game, cancel it. It's very simple. It. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's where we're headed. I mean, everything that every conversation now is about streaming. It's a lot of people see it as kind of the evolution, the next step in where we're going as we move further away from cable and satellite packages. So, I mean, it's just part of it. And like you said, even if you don't like it and that's not the direction you want to head for this step, all you had to do was sign up one day, watch it and drop it. Done.
Yeah, definitely. In other playoff games, the Buffalo Bills defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers 31-17. And a game that was originally scheduled for Sunday was moved to Monday because of weather conditions. And so Buffalo will host Kansas City in a game that has proven to be a very exciting game when Absolutely. These two teams get together. And we're going to see Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes face off yet again in the playoffs. Definitely a game that you don't want to miss. That will be a Sunday game. Evening game, 6:30 Eastern time, 5:30 Central time, Kansas City at Buffalo. So hopefully there's not another whiteout snowstorm that disrupts yeah, that hopefully. Game. But it will be cold. It's in Buffalo.
Did you see the footage of the, I think it was a family of Steeler fans. It was like a mom and dad and daughter, like kicking through the snow. We're going to the game. We're getting to our seats. Just not going to slow us down. They were just kicking. I thought that was fantastic. I love seeing that. You don't stop a Steeler fan, do you? No matter what's going on.
We really haven't evolved that much from the pioneers on the Oregon Trail. Go figure. And they paid good money for those seats, too, I bet you.
And that's right. And that's, you notice the dab was in front. That's exactly what he was thinking. You think this snow's going to keep, we paid for these seats. We're getting to Oregon Trail. That, how many?
What's that?
I said Oregon Trail. How many times did you die playing that game? Just out of curiosity.
Too many than that I can count.
Me too.
One thing that I don't know if this is a common occurrence. I don't watch a lot of, I guess I haven't noticed it before in Buffalo playoff games, but I noticed fans throwing snowballs toward the field during the game. So I hope that the NFL or someone that I just don't see how that not good.
Yeah. Agree completely.
We are still waiting on an outcome of the Philadelphia-Tampa Bay game, which will complete the playoff bracket. But a very exciting game, probably the most exciting from a historical perspective, was the victory, the Detroit Lions over the Los Angeles Rams 24-23, with that storyline of Matthew Stafford coming back to Detroit, facing off against his former team, the Lions, and Jared Goff, who... they swapped quarterbacks, Detroit and LA. Yep. Of course, Stafford went to the Rams, ended up winning a Super Bowl. Jared Goff has not done that yet, but Detroit hosted a home playoff game for the first time in 30 years, and they won.
And it was their first victory in a playoff game in 32 years. Pretty incredible.
Phenomenal.
We talk a lot about head coaches and the changes that they can make, and we even talked about that with DeMeco Ryan in Houston. Well, I tell you what, Dan Campbell, you talk about making a difference in an entire organization. It's been incredible what he has done with that Detroit team, and honestly, with that entire organization. You know, the NFL Hard Knocks. That was, I think it was two seasons ago or last season. They were featured on that as the preseason team. Didn't watch all of it, but I watched quite a bit of it. It was the things that they were doing and the way he was approaching that team and building that organization and building the team. Really, really incredible.
Yeah.
What he's accomplishing.
Yeah. It's a great time to be a Detroit Lions fan. They have endured so much. And it was wonderful to see that franchise have a home playoff game and then to win that game. So they are awaiting the winner of Philadelphia and Tampa Bay. Whoever wins that game will travel to Detroit for a Sunday afternoon game. And it, of course, will be another electric atmosphere. So congratulations to the Lions and their fans on that win. Now, before we move on to this week in sports history, as we're recording this, it is Martin Luther King Day. And it's a day to remember the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. And that includes thinking about some of the things that he said and the lessons he taught us. And Darren, as I was thinking about some of my favorite Martin Luther King quotes, this one always comes up. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? So today we remember, I think it's the 100th anniversary of his birth, Martin Luther King Jr.
Awesome.
Let's go to This Week in Sports History.
Hank Aaron was one of the greatest baseball players of all time, but he was also a civil rights icon who faced racism and hatred throughout his career. Aaron broke the color barrier in the South Atlantic League in 1953 when he played for the Braves minor league affiliate in Jacksonville, Florida. He was one of the first players to integrate the league along with two teammates from the Braves and two players from the Athletics. Aaron endured abuse and threats from fans, opponents, and even some of his own teammates, but he never let it stop him from pursuing his dream of playing in the majors. In 1974, Aaron achieved his most famous feat, breaking Babe Ruth's record of 714 career home runs. Ruth was a legend who had held the record for almost 40 years. On April 8, 1974, Aaron hit his 715th home run in front of a cheering crowd in Atlanta, making history and inspiring millions. Aaron's legacy is not only measured by his statistics, but by his impact on American society. He challenged the racial barriers that existed in baseball and beyond, and he fought for civil rights and equalities throughout his life. He was a role model and mentor for many young black athletes, and he used his fame and influence to support causes he believed in. He was honored with many awards and recognitions, including the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2002. Hank Aaron was more than a baseball player. He was a hero who changed the game.
Oh, thank you.
Moving back to college football, where there was significant movement this past week, and one of the one of the biggest stories, probably the biggest story in college football this year, Nick Saban retired at Alabama. We've got a lot more to say about Coach Saban and his legacy, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, there were some other moves, that corresponded to that, and others that we want to mention. So, Darren, what's the latest on the coaching carousel, as you often term it?
Well, it, obviously, with the move that was made with Coach Saban retiring, as you said, we'll talk about that more in a little bit. That left a vacancy, and then Kalen DeBoer was hired as the replacement to be the next head coach at the University of Alabama. That leaves a vacancy at the University of Washington, which was then filled by Jed Fish from Arizona. And I think I'm saying that right. And then the Arizona vacancy, as of the time of recording, has not yet been filled. So that's that domino is kind of the last, as of right now, head coach domino to fall. Don't know if that's going to be internal or if they're going to look elsewhere. But that's they have to make their retirement. And then the only real, I mean, obviously a couple of different things outside of the Alabama situation. Pat Shurmur, who has been on the Colorado staff, is now the offensive coordinator at Colorado. So that's of note just because of the amount of attention that Deion Sanders and Coach Prime and the Colorado Buffaloes that they get. Then the other pieces of the kind of the coaching carousel kind of all the way down, just very, very quickly, on the field and off the field, here are the people that Kalen DeBoer has hired to this point. Ryan Grubb, his offensive coordinator at Washington, has come with him. He will be the offensive coordinator at Alabama. Jamarcus Washington will be the wide receivers coach. Robert Gillespie, the running back coach. Scott Huff will be the offensive line coach. And I got to tell you, that is of significant note because we have talked about for the last 2 or 3 years, maybe even 4 years, we have been talking about it for 3 years, but it may be even the last 4 years that it's been talked about within Alabama that there have been offensive line struggles. And the Washington offensive line were the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line last year. So I think it's significant that he is able to bring the head or the offensive line coach with him that coached the best offensive line in all of college football last year. So a very good thing for Alabama and for this staff. Nick Sheridan will be the tight ends coach. Freddie Roach, the defensive line coach. That's significant because that is a holdover from Coach Saban's staff. And then off the field, Courtney Morgan will be the general manager, which he was with Coach DeBoer at Washington and previously was at Michigan and is the person from a overall roster management and recruitment perspective. A lot of people give credit for building the Michigan roster that we saw on the field just this year and then obviously helped build. So most people give this guy credit for being the architect behind the scenes of two of the four rosters we saw on the field for the 14 playoff this year. So that's a pretty significant hire to have him come and be with the team or be with them there in Alabama. And then just kind of an interesting side note, Jarrett McElwain will be the director of scouting, and that is Jim McElwain's son, who was Nick Saban's offensive coordinator at one point, of course, went on to be a head coach at Florida. I think at one point maybe he was at Colorado State, maybe at one point after his time at Florida. But anyway, I just found that to be an interesting little connection that one of Coach Saban's former offensive coordinators' son is now going to be part of this new Alabama staff. So Jarrett McElwain will be the director of scouting for Coach DeBoer.
And a significant loss for Alabama, Travius Robinson leaves. Georgia hired him as a co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach. Not only did he do a great job with Alabama, he is a great recruiter in the South. So that's going to be a big loss. One of those guys that I think DeBoer tried to keep. I think he had even a 2-hour meeting with him and
exactly.
And Robinson elected to go to Georgia.
And it's not a coaching note, but just because we're talking about people that they're also losing at this point, and this is not just as a direct result of Coach Saban retiring, but a cumulative effect since January 3rd, since they were eliminated from the playoffs. And there, the Alabama transfer portal window opened and now has been extended. If they get 30 days from the day Coach Saban retired, they now have a total of 28 players that have entered the portal. So just a little side note that is a part of all of the coaching changes there at Alabama.
And as of Monday night, I believe Caleb Downs has not made a decision. And I'm sure that's causing Alabama fans a lot of acid reflux.
And honestly, it would surprise me if he does. I don't think he will go because obviously there's resources that can meet whatever NIL needs there may be or wants, whatever the case is. And also, I think there was a very significant relationship between he and Coach Saban. And knowing that Coach Saban is still basically going to be in the building as he discussed in an interview on ESPN. I'm blank on the guy's name they interviewed with, the guy from Game Day, Reese Davis. I just went blank there. Reese Davis, he discussed in the interview with Reese Davis that he's going to have an office, you know, there in the stadium. So I think that will be a significant piece in what ends up ultimately what I think in Caleb Downs staying, but still the fact that it's taken this long for him to say not going anywhere, I could see, as you said, there is definitely some need for some Zantac among the Alabama faithful.
And how strong is his connection with Coach Robinson, who left and went to
that's exactly right,
Georgia, his position coach. So
yep.
There's a lot of unanswered questions. Of course, it's been talked about all over. Kalen DeBoer choosing to follow in the steps of Nick Saban. A very difficult job for the best of coaches. And there's questions about how DeBoer will do, much like there were questions about when Brian Kelly came to LSU. He's not from the South. How's he going to do recruiting? Mm-hmm. And one of the great things that Brian Kelly did was he got those key people, those key recruiters, those folks that know, in particular, Louisiana and the South, and he empowered them to do their job. Now, will Kalen DeBoer do that? Because I don't know how to put it for people who don't live in the South. It is a totally different beast. It's
absolutely.
And if people do not recognize that, if people say people are people, it's not going to be that much different, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And so we'll see how Kalen DeBoer handles that. I know you mentioned the quote general manager he's bringing with him. Well, you know, it's going to take a while for Southerners that these homes they go into these players to trust them. And if you don't adopt the culture, if you're not eating that plate of greens that they serve,
that's right.
Whatever it is, there's going to be a learning curve there. Now, Brian Kelly seems to have done very well with that,
right?
Absolutely. Kalen DeBoer may do very well with that at all, but wow, just replacing Nick Saban, the GOAT. Ouch.
Yeah, and it's such a finicky Southern – the football culture in the South is so finicky. I'm pretty sure we talked about it in part of the Brian – you know, as the Brian Harsin Turns saga over the couple of years he was at Auburn. There were a whole lot of people that pointed to a moment in his first season at Auburn when he and his wife went to a it wasn't a fund. It was like a quarterback club event or something like that in South Alabama. And her outfit, she didn't wear anything that was, she didn't show up wearing a Georgia Bulldog jersey, but she showed up wearing red and black, which are Georgia Bulldog colors, to an Auburn quarterback club event. And that was a moment when a whole lot of very notable people said, nope, not a fit. That's how finicky the Southern football culture can be. And you're exactly right. You have to embrace that. You have to go all in not only embracing it, but allowing that to embrace you and understanding it as quick as you can, how to work within it. And then the point you were just making, on top of that, the stress of I'm here replacing Nick Saban. Whew, that's tough. That's a whole lot. Especially, I mean, this will be what, his third year coaching in D1 ball? Is that correct?
Well, he was at Washington for 2 years.
2 years.
Was he Fresno State before that?
Oh, that's right. That's right. He was at Fresno State 1 year though. So this will be his fourth year. Mm-hmm. As a head coach. Now, I know he was an OC at Fresno before, but this will be his fourth year total as a head coach in D1 ball. Oof, that's tough.
And it's a much different fan base than the Washington fan base. At Washington, you have a season and you lose two or three games, you're okay. If you lose two games consistently at Alabama each year, you're on the hot seat. If you lose three games, your job is downright in jeopardy. It's a whole different animal. Now, another question that is going to play out is, how is this going to work between DeBoer and Saban? I know he said all the things he was supposed to say at his conference in Tuscaloosa. He's an open door to Coach Saban. He's going to be consulting Coach Saban a lot. That's a very difficult transition, because the players that were recruited and played for Saban, it's hard to make that transition. Okay, Saban's still here. He's still got an office here. He's the GOAT. Can I trust this DeBoer guy? And the real test of that's going to come when things do not go well.
Right.
They have an early game. Their first SEC game next year is against Georgia.
Exactly.
If that goes poorly, DeBoer's going to he's going to understand the passion of the Alabama fan base. I mean, these folks come unglued when you say that their defensive end should have been penalized more than a personal foul call for knocking out the LSU quarterback. They're ready to throw down.
You LSU idiots, get over it. The passion. Well said. That's right. The passion.
And Nick Saban excelled in this environment. And let's talk a little bit about Nick Saban as the GOAT. Because even though you're a Vanderbilt fan, I'm an LSU fan, we recognize that Nick Saban is the greatest college football coach of all time. And there's really not much debate about it. 17 seasons at Alabama. He, from 2007 to 2023, 6 national championships at Alabama. He has 7 overall, 1 at LSU that he won in 2003. He coached for LSU from 2000 to 2004 and really got that program going in a good direction, brought them back to a place of national standing. Won 201 games at Alabama, 11 SEC championships. Not bad for a kid from Fairmont, West Virginia, who's done extremely well for himself. And Darren, you've got some statistics that you wanted to share as well to just illustrate how great a coach Nick Saban was.
Never had a losing season in 17 seasons at Alabama. Matter of fact, he went 7-6 his first season, and then the next 16 seasons were all top 10 finishes at a minimum. Of course, some of them were top 5, Some of them were national championships, but all of them were at top 10 at a minimum. He has had 36 former assistants in both the NFL and college become head coaches. 36 former assistants. That is absolutely incredible. And of course, we know some of the names, you know, Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin, Kirby Smart. And of course, we, you know, some of those came through after their first head coaching stints. People like Kiffin, like Sarkisian, Mario Cristobal, Butch Jones, you know, all of those guys came through after some very difficult head coaching stints to learn from the GOAT and then give it another shot to kind of restart their head coaching career. Speaking of head coaches, though, this is the number that really blows my mind. During his 17 years at Alabama, 54 other coaches, 54 other coaches began and ended their tenure in the SEC. 54. That's that to me, that's an absolutely amazing number. And I want to give credit. A lot of this comes from On3 Sports. So I want to give credit where credit is due. And then the other one to throw out real quick is the number three. Three positions: quarterback, running back, and receiver. At Alabama, Nick Saban coached a Heisman, at least one Heisman Trophy winner in all three of those positions, and two running backs that were Heisman Trophy winners. Absolutely, I mean, that's GOAT stuff. And then just one more real quick. I forgot about this one. I want to throw it out. During his entire career, not just in Alabama, there are people who have not played the number one team 11 times in their entire career. He played against the number one team 11 times in his career and finished that record was 8-3. So 8 times he went up against the number one team in the country and came out victorious. 8-3. Absolutely incredible.
A phenomenal record. Thank you for sharing those statistics. But let me tell you why I admire Coach Saban. Not for all that. That's all impressive, and we acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But here's what carries even more weight in my book. Nick and his wife, Terry, have been married, I believe, for 52 years.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. In 1998, they started an organization called Nick's Kids, raising money and giving out money to different charities and organizations that take care of children in all kinds of situations, from special needs to foster care to whatever the situation may be. Since 1998, Nick's Kids has raised $11 million. They've given away $11 million. That's absolutely phenomenal. Awesome. Also, he's been a part of building 19 Habitat for Humanity homes. 19. Now, we can talk a lot about what a great coach. He's the greatest of all time. But let's talk about the person, Coach Saban, the person who has been married to the same woman for 52 years. And from all that we can tell, it looks like an incredibly happy marriage. Let's talk about the Nick Saban, who together with his wife started an organization that has given $11 million to help children in various situations, 19 Habitat for Humanity homes. That's what makes Coach Saban so great. Yep. And I got one more personal story about Coach Saban. It doesn't involve me, but it involves my son. So, when my son was just, I think he was a freshman or sophomore in high school, the high school football team had a player on the defensive line, a defensive tackle, who Saban was recruiting. And so he came over one day to meet with him. And of course, my son ended up just getting started in high school football at that point. And anyway, he's walking up the stairs between classes, and he notices several people in front of him. There's the principal and there's the athletic director and there's some other people. And then there's a guy, and Drew was like, who is that guy? He's trying to get a peek at him. And they get to the top of the stairs and turn around. And at that point, Drew's caught up to them, and it's Coach Saban.
Wow.
Drew's mouth drops.
Of course.
And Coach Saban turned around, looked at him, stuck out his hand and said, "Hi, how you doing? I'm Coach Nick Saban." And Drew just he just reached out, you know, one of those shaking his hand like,
"Yes, you are. Yes, you are."
But that moment's always stuck with him, that he wasn't even here to talk to him. He was here to talk to a specific player, but he still was kind and he took that moment, and that meant a lot to a high school kid that has never forgotten that. Awesome. So those are some of the things that make me admire Coach Saban so much.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a fantastic story. I'm glad you shared that. That's because you're exactly right. And you know, that point is made a lot, and you can hear him talk about it. And even in that interview with Reese Davis that we mentioned earlier, when Reese Davis asked him about things that stood out, one of the things he mentioned was he listed players that had went on to play in the NFL. And he said, "But when I think about those guys and I see them out helping Miss Terry build a house, that's what means something to me." That's awesome. That's so incredible. I really appreciate you sharing that story. And like you said, that just adds to exactly what you love most about him and what made him the GOAT, because all of that feeds into and creates and makes possible what's happened on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. He will be missed. I know he's going to be very involved in Alabama football in particular, but it's not going to be the same without seeing him on the sidelines.
Absolutely. Be very, very strange game one next year.
So thank you for watching another episode of the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast. We appreciate you so much. Remember to hit that like button, that subscribe button. Once you subscribe to us on our YouTube channel, you won't ever miss an episode. You'll always receive an alert, say, "Hey, a new episode's out." So, you know, particularly when we throw in special episodes throughout various seasons. We are moving into basketball season, so there'll be some of those coming up as we get closer to March Madness. New episodes drop every Tuesday at 6 a.m. If Darren gets up that early, he might sleep in sometimes. If you're wondering, that episode what didn't happened? Come out till 7:30. What was going on? Well, Darren was tired that day, and he needed to get a little bit of sleep. Okay, so cut him some slack. Exactly. But we'll see you next Tuesday when that episode drops. And until then, y'all take care.
Have a great week.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is so important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or a text to our text line 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast. See you next week.